the amateur genius. 1. This man, I think, pulls me toward the sky, clear light his extended self. On the Boulevard Louchoir, a window non-teased into the mind of the amateur genius. The amateur genius levitated an arm toward the shop window. I could have written that very book on the subject of the adventurer Jules Verne, Many Miraculous Adventures, he exclaimed. The book remained heavy where it was. The bookstore was occupied by two people only, a buyer and a seller, usually a buyer and a seller. Oh, these bookstores no longer do exist. A certain meal is conceivable, also a fragrant synopsis. None of this exists. Space drops into its context, and the meal, the roast meats, the total paraphernalia of memory laced with what never happens, occurs again and again like a fidget. The amateur genius went home. He fluffed a pillow and lay his head against it. Soft now, and thin fine hair, had held, made a medley of idea on white. Oh, he scoured the apartment. The amateur genius slept into the bookstore medicine chest. Weight of books. I could have written the same Jules Verne, the same Victor Hugo, the Boulevard Ruchoir sunlight history, and cracked open myself a genius skull with my own day laborer hands, all the better to savor this very prayer. Book and prayer? See how they lie neatly under the amateur genius's long eye, long into the head, twisting like a coil in retreat from the light. Pigment factory. Mere joy there in the dark. Sway center. The bookstore genius opening a door, like opening the leaves of an iron book into the darkness, but what warmth and moisture under the rising aroma of those blank pages, invisible meal. Alone now, the amateur genius whirled into the double being that purged the ideas in his head. What a disappointment when a book disappoints the amateur genius and the gold letters cover nothing but genuine reflection. 2. In the occult city of Paris, the amateur genius rounded a corner to see a bookshop window pouring contents into the street. That was in his imagination. A truck passed slow, and from it descended a young man with a star noticeably on his forehead, who began searching through the disgorged contents. Remarkable enough, generating a happenstance, three wide discs of metal versus 25 books with brightly colored dust jackets. A boarded-up theater front that was perfect for receiving projectiles that, once embedded, would suggest an interior never to be fully penetrated. The amateur genius himself lifted a book from the pavement. The truck, now turning a corner, the young man rubbing his forehead with the back of his hand and tossing his one selected volume toward the theater front where it penetrated the wooden boards to lodge there in apparent permanence, half into the wood. The amateur genius himself tripped on the pile of book garbage and fell face forward. The young man looked back, but rather than offering help, sped toward the now invisible truck. The amateur genius pulled at the boards covering the theater. Why? He was looking for something. Somewhat later, the amateur genius came into money and retired, but of course he faced the problem of what to do with his life. Keep active, ordered Maurice. It's disgusting to withdraw from life, plus you'll get depressed very fast. This in itself is a kind of adventure, he thought to himself. All it needs is a slight twist of perspective to make it interesting enough to engage me totally. What's in the head now? He wondered. 3. The amateur genius turned on the radio and poetry radio came through. Where does this poetry come from? He queried himself. It interfered with normal reception, or normal radio, and the amateur genius went for a drink. Me too, said Alfred. Me too sometimes when I twiddle the dial. Here's what I do. And he clapped hands over his two ears. Poetry radio is very disruptive, chimed in a neighbor, and I hardly think it has a right to call itself poetry, though I can see why it calls itself radio. That made the amateur genius think, and as he promenaded down the boulevard afterward, he did disruptive things, though they were only disruptive internally so that nobody else would notice. Everybody else replied, if questioned, the amateur genius? He looks perfectly normal doing his perfectly normal thing. 4. A glass of water. Water? A breath of air. Ah, what a web of intentions. Sitting in the cafe, watching the city. Something wants to happen here. I open a door. If one confronts this trajectory, this web, this world. I went to the cafe. Crystallized morning. I went to the cafe. That is, I left by the front door. A click released the lock, which reverberated in me, that click. A world full of intentions, a grid of intentions, A web of intentions decorate, circle back on themselves, so have none. Oh, great mirror city, is it this moment that will release me, lift physical into spirit? The great work, trajectory, tantra? Enter geometry city. The world is a mirror I sometimes fall into the trap of believing in. I arrived in a city. Oh, city apostrophic mode, city of turnings is what I call you, because each small street turns geometricized and reveals reflections of its former self. The chimera named the amateur genius appeared and spoke his own chimera self. What city is it where a corner restaurant speaks? Geometry city? Mirror city? Light? Like another place. Nectar of light, painting flowers on faces, angels, Avengers. Is it you, the amateur genius? Yes, I realized the sweetness in me had to be me in me, not in the city sketched in front of me. I was drunk on a molecule of water, a sip of air. 5. A life spent reading. The amateur genius entered the book. He vanished into the book. He imagined a book into which to vanish. He imagined the others who had vanished into the selfsame book. He imagined that total country. He imagined the many and distant countries that had been formed by each book in his library, each volume linked to the many others of the same title existing in many other libraries read by many others. So that meant many people, linked in invisible units, controlled by the imaginary countries of the different books that were read. Many people, such as himself, belonging to many such secret units, having no idea of the identities of the many others so linked in similar, if not quite exactly similar, imaginary realms, so close and yet so far, but as if the book at the center were the alive thing and the readers, such as the amateur genius, of course, mere parasites, living off the vividness of the book, even if it was not a vivid book. This was a mystery, he realized, and he realized that it was a mystery echoed in many forms, in songs and dramas and other formalized events of the imagination and even language itself, from which all drank and into which all disappeared, so that the link between them all was profound but full of aberrance and absence and ineffability. 6. I'm trying to reach you where you are, says the amateur genius. I'm trying to have the effect on you, the major effect on you. I'm trying to bleed the major organs in the way you already know is possible. I'm trying to be at the very center of your life, says the amateur genius. Not your dream life, except it's your dream life that I consider your real life and vice versa. 7. The amateur genius, before his departure to the mountains, feared heights in order to relish his fear. He stood once on the roof of a 6-story building. Nothing unusual happened, and that was the material he had to deal with. Had to, he repeated to himself, imagining the journey back down the stairs to the ground floor. The amateur genius undressed in order to pose better and lifted his arms as if flying. When he returned, the depths of his adventurous nature asserted itself. Looking at himself in the mirror, something happened, not funny. But he was already clean-shaven, and his heart was in his throat, which grew, until his language inhabited a dimension that had one direction only. 8. The amateur genius finally made escape so relevant nobody could claim to see or not see. He, in his mode of locomotion, invented only those categories no one else cared about. 9. Once on top of a mountain, the fact that I did not have a vast cosmic experience only hit much later. Where am I? Recognize this place? Too bad you didn't break the code. Give me another chance, you say? Of course. The amateur genius saw double and chalked it up to the fact he had not one but two eyes, like everybody else, of course, but not everybody else dove into that fact as deeply and profoundly as did the amateur genius. One evening, in the presence of other people, he keyed out of the conversation totally and just concentrated on tricks he could play inside his own two eyes. It made where he was seem evocative of someplace else he had been or had imagined, and it definitely renewed the freshness and spontaneity of the place in which he in fact was. Wait a minute, said the amateur genius's alter ego. Does a place have spontaneity, or is that not a quality reserved for a person only? A spontaneous place, I can see what that would imply, but is it not a rather irresponsible mixing of logical possibilities? There must be a valuable hint in that improperly phrased idea that occurred to me so spontaneously. What place am I? And he looked about the room, carefully noting how fragments of his own body, glimpsed, framed that view. Suddenly he felt a rush of genuine energy as the phrase recurred in his imagination, almost this time taking the form of palpable red letters, this, and the word this was not part of the nascent physicalization important to keep in mind in order to make the phrase itself more universally applicable, this spontaneous place. It was just an ordinary room, of course, in which anything could happen. 10. The way the brain works? I can't be expected to be expected. 3 times, which has to be very significant, I was corralled, collared, by my own lurch into the realm of the dark, you guessed it. The amateur genius talked a lot like that on his travels. This time he was off to a better-than-ever place. Whiskey in one hand, nothing in the other, he resolved to be better and better at the game of life. To the point, you might say, and more to the point. 11. The amateur genius, some trinkets assembled multiple, descended down the wide imaginative steps that spilled bright into the morning sun, washed and washed doubly through a projected and swallowed gleam, oh, in the head. He, the amateur genius, was descending to the river, current or not, may run at the foot, so very, very, very. 12. Asked to comment on XYZ's book, the amateur genius surprised himself in his own mirror. Usually his mind was or had been ferocious. Now a certain elegance of the hand, lifting slowly to the forehead, was all that remained. The comment requested, be it understood, was to be written in his own hand, but when he turned sideways the hand vanished, and then it was back, in full dimensionality. How include that in one's consideration? No one would understand. Zap, and he did it. 13. The amateur genius went into a bar that said bar in red letters, and the gray wind wasn't a problem on that particular day, at least, when the man behind the counter said, "Your choice." The amateur genius decided to stretch his reply, his language, so thin that the man behind the bar wouldn't even notice what he said or that he did say anything. The amateur genius sat. To the brightly dressed lady at one side, he said, "My strong point is to stretch my language so thin it stretches space itself. My strong point is to use or write a language that possesses the inability to do anything." The lady in the brightly colored dress flounced a reply of sorts, and the amateur genius retreated from a caress, even though a beer was brought to the table. I thought I was still leaning on the bar, he thought. He retreated, understandably, into his wonderful language that didn't touch or affect or move even a speck of dirt. "You see, this is a weak force phenomenon," he whispered to the crowd that was just, as it were, dissolving under the laser beam of his vision. And as the light grew, the amateur genius smiled ruefully to himself and thought, "Oh, not again." So nobody moved a muscle. "You see," said the amateur genius, "to move things with language is to stray, fallen into the material world." He drank his beer. "No, that's not true." He didn't. 14. The amateur genius had nothing to say, and the moment he knew this with a certainty, his mind cleared amazingly. He could go anywhere now. His speed was unequaled. Mind stuff, empty of everything but a laughter that had no source, no object, no dimension in and of itself either, just the perpetual shaking and cracking and fissure adventure that existed independently of all substance. Mind stuff. When the amateur genius returned to the bowl of creation, that is to say, when he re-encountered it in the absence that was him inside his knowledge tunnel, look, you should know about what the amateur genius had printed backward on the inside, visible to nobody, of the thin white band of ribbon he affected to stretch around his forehead and back over the ears, completing the circle of his head. "I know nothing whatsoever," was written. And it was the whatsoever that made it effective on his brain, concluded the amateur genius, whenever the pressure on his skull reminded him of the words embossed backward thereon. The amateur genius did everything as usual. But of course it was more like an adventure, and the habitual tasks, like going to the market, archetypically filled his days in a way that made choice a nothing, and knockout blows to the imagination ramrodded themselves in through the fingers that seemed to press again lovingly against his bulging temples. "Ah, everybody's looking at me now," thought the amateur genius. He smiled, hoping it would light up everyday life, and it did, because even the snickers seemed to bounce into the life of the people who snickered in a different way, and they found themselves, a bit later to be sure, catching something out of the corner of an eye. "But where else, I ask you? The corner of an eye. Where else?" And one realized that it was the amateur genius who somehow put such thoughts and such words into one's head. 15. Speeding, speeding, the amateur genius said, now that I am in Speed City. But look, nothing in fact seems to be moving that fast. Huh, somebody else knew better. Speed, he intoned, and the bell-like sounds of his speed word cut off a brain or two at the roots, at least. What gushed forth was so pure, so uncontaminated, that the only available response was a kind of acquiescence. What a remarkable cushion upon which to set that single and brilliant word. So the dwarfs of Speed City, they all look like dwarfs in their speed, said the amateur genius, party-going or not, all coagulated into a flux that indeed seemed slower and slower as it got faster and faster. And it was only that double movement, both a matter of reference frames, that allowed the musical fact to take over other kinds of notational facts totally. Ah, that's what I meant by totality when I said speed, cried for a second time the amateur genius, to mix up my words. I'm into that big... And everybody else, distracted by some different revealing itself for a moment phenomenon, applauded with energy. 16. The amateur genius was on a street where the brick surface of the wall confronting him did sparkle, deserted as the street was on the Sunday that it was, and the amateur genius tried to think about the brain roots that twisted into a very real anti-space, spaced into the careful click that widened as idea on idea performed mutual erasure so that the writing the amateur genius did, and upon his very brain the amateur genius did write. Write not the ideas, spoke the amateur genius. The ideas perform in mutual erasure. Write rather the brainstem rush. So when that is written, nothing is written. Or rather, the writing speaks, so the weakened eye speaks a kind of internal stress and strain out of which pop the grapefruits of, dare I say it, a second world, a third world. There are grapefruits that do thinking as well as other sweetness. And the orchards waving found not a wind in which to comply, but popping through and into space, a carried-out emptiness was a container, and so slow with the fire it did not have. 17. The amateur genius abandoned effort. In the room, with large windows open to the garden that was not visible, dominated by the light, effortlessness was possible. It expanded, not sought. The goal was behind him, passing through him, it flowed through him, and they said, how can a goal be inescapable? Turning, twisting, one never hides from it? Non-achievement as a contradiction in terms? An impossibility? And one of them grasped it. 18. The amateur genius and the dogs. He killed some, others he held in abeyance. But whose dogs are these, was the real question. The amateur genius was supposed to answer. Why not? Why not answer if he's the amateur genius, after all? Because his answer would mark him, the amateur genius, and once marked, he would be in the street as a tall kind of king that nobody else could see or touch or relate to in any way whatsoever. Isn't that what I'm after? Asked the amateur genius. And he answered himself, not quite. You have corralled your own idea about yourself quite effectively. But after it's all signed, sealed, and delivered, what you really want is a cool time at the end of a leash. So change places, which even you can't do, and just wait till every dog has his day. Oh, the amateur genius strained at the end of that particular leash, and as the shadows on the street deepened, everybody on the street sent him a friendly smile, which he alone knew, on each of its separate occasions, had no reason to be thought of as real, even though it smelled nice. 19. The amateur genius confronted the ocean, but from the safety of his hotel window he saw nothing but waves and a horizon. Huh? Turning to the tea, which had been deposited in his hotel room, the amateur genius said aloud, "Who shall share this tea?" As it happens, he was alone. Everybody called him the amateur genius. Then the telephone rang, but just once, and nobody was on the other end of the line. A metallic voice said, "Hello. Watch for me to arrive in a helicopter." And when the amateur genius directed his gaze toward the window, his angle of vision was such, he being deep within the room now, that he could no longer see the ocean. The telephone was the other big feature. He held it in his hand and studied it. Soon his gaze relaxed, and the object seemed to vanish along with the voice. 20. The amateur genius entered a room with no back door when someone entered to drink coffee, and his head, who, the amateur genius, went into some kind of terrible spin. I can't open the door to my own mind, so how can I find the way out? Oh, well, that wasn't the amateur genius. Not yet. He only featured the unrecognizable tone of voice that somebody else was good at using as he was good at using. All of us decided to party in some of the best places, said the man who came in with the funny crossed eyes. And once he'd really drunk up his cup of coffee, he went into all other areas. Fast? The amateur genius wished it were so, but he was thinking about himself, not the ex-cross-eyed coffee drinker. You haven't asked for much in the way of explanation, he was challenged. Oh, well, the amateur genius didn't really know from tailspins or anything else worth half talking about or not, so he dropped in and everybody else had a good laugh, but as of yet, they hadn't shown up. Then who laughed? Wondered the amateur genius. Ah, the back door. There it was.
21.
What does, did not, the amateur genius receive in the way of communications? Oh, he wasn't only thinking about words. Not the point, in fact. Can you point at things, said Marie, and believe they come from the real source? Ah, Marie, who knows from sources? The very words themselves have a physicality when I write them. Should we call that a source? Writing something and saying something, that's an interesting distinction, Maurice. Don't you feel... Yes, I do. I feel that words arising from the hand movements have, A, a kind of materiality, and, B, there's a little delay in the writing, isn't there? That delay lets something come into the writing that lets, say, just let's say I will call it the source, or write, if you please, the source. And you have to know that saying it isn't the same thing because there isn't that kind of slight delay that lets some things get through the web of writing, and keeps other things out. So maybe that's why I'm not very much into talking to you or to other people. But if the communication could be written, which means through the hand, then the necessary gap and the necessary flicker of possibility between imagination and writing could make the face-to-face relationship less face-to-face and more heart-to-heart in a desirably bonded way that is not possible unless a certain hesitancy is ever present as the rhythm of respiration, and that third part, the mutual hesitancy and respiration, is the important member of the triad. Between two, but it's a triad. Between a hypothetical me, a hypothetical you, and a never-varying third item that is consistent and the natural source, that gap that is always the source.
22.
The amateur genius hoped, and a mountain rose in the distance. Was that there before? He asked. And before he could answer who roller skated by? Nothing but pavement. Lovely wide pavement was revealed. Oh, my God, under those roller skates! But how many mountains do I have to manifest or discuss or put my fingers on in order to say these are real or these are not real? Then I lose my balance, said the amateur genius, but I never lose my balance because speed comes into the picture and turns a tumble, thank God for my roller skates, into a triumph.
23.
The amateur genius tossed and turned over a leaf, the folio falling from his hands. Wow. A traffic light in an unexpected place was enough to stop him cold. Marie, in the back seat, said loudly, I'm convinced that your combo changes reaching a car, I mean recombined. Ha! He said. I avoided all the collisions you could think of fast. Fast, hissed Marie, as another corner was turned and a car with indistinguishable letters peeled to the left. Why am I asleep, left dreaming about don't finish your sentence, said Marie, calm now. But the amateur genius was far from calm, though his hand didn't shake. On the steering wheel it was as if radiant, and the spin, though only in his imagination, didn't expect memorizable text in the other to keep piling up new and ever new nuggets he packed so tightly into his memory bank. Marie was forced to hallucinate. Don't go to page 100 before I've had time to digest what just whizzed past. The trolley beside them couldn't turn, of course, unless the track it was on turned for it. Is that absent? The amateur genius grumbled to himself. No, that's my kind of freedom, the kind I like best. But Marie kept on thinking he was so deep into his own turn of thought, so she heard nothing.
24.
The universe turned on itself, and what resulted was more of itself. A new street, the sudden coagulation of a window, multi-paned, an energy from a door, a part of the universe holding its head, even bandages that seemed to extend to a bridge crossing the universe of a river that turned on itself. And voice, the pain voice that wasn't a pain, did cry now, beautiful sunlight that I am, I shall river inhabit, turning against multiple feet bathed into the desirable universe water. The universe entered its own brightly lit room.
The universe ate, and 1,000 mouths, miles, smiling into the blank hole where the amateur genius sat. 25. The amateur genius knew that time stopped. He lurched through a window, and the cold air blew and blew, and the amateur genius grabbed his hat. "Seated in an apartment?" questioned Marie. "You should be out on the streets holding your hat, maybe, since that's how I like to see a man looking like himself." The amateur genius smiled and touched his watch, though Marie only said, "Why are you touching your wrist?" The amateur genius went into the next room and turned on the water tap, and lo and behold, water poured into his life. "I don't want to come in there and see you with your hand under the tap," pouted Marie. But the amateur genius heard nothing but the roar of the water as he mused how a thing traveling past at a certain number of definite miles per hour was at the same time as constant in motionlessness as his own fixed steel, iron, ice, eye. 26. The amateur genius, spinning to a direction he thought to be west, really discovered it was east, and the various sidewalk vectors said, "Look, we're people, really." And the individuals who spoke this were headed in so many directions that the amateur genius knew a town with so many tasks underway was strong enough to surface and resume in his dreams, even. Laying his head on a pillow that night, Marie interrupted his reverie. "Guess who I ran into today?" Before she could finish, the amateur genius caught a gleam of light in her eye. "It was me." "Did you say that, or did I imagine that?" Was it Marie or the amateur genius who did go on talking when it should have been lights out? How do you notice enough to turn everybody you meet into real people? But the amateur genius had that problem solved. He just let vectors stay vectors. In other words, the flow continued and he stirred. "Ah," said the amateur genius, "a pot boils even if you stir to make it calm. That goes for people, too. Why, my relationships, if not calm exactly, do get on with it." And Marie had by now turned her back. Only the amateur genius knew it was an invitation, though Marie didn't. When the nightmare was over and breakfast was being served, the amateur genius picked up a very sparkling white napkin from the tablecloth, but look, it was attached. Was that a trick of Marie's? But she seemed surprised also, as some of the more precarious of the leftover items tumbled to the carpet. Down on all fours, the morning sunlight streaming through thrown-open windows. Does the sunlight come easier than ever? Well, it was true that the circular in the amateur genius's system was even more fluid whenever he was under a table, as he now was, searching even for a piece of buttered toast that had, of course, picked up whatever it was going to pick up from the carpet. "Look, I'm wearing the jam pot as a crown." Marie said that, but nobody registered it. And just as when she turned her back, the amateur genius knew it was only one of 100 ideas that went through her head so fast it was up to him or anybody else to choose. That was why he liked being on the street, and he felt sure that today also he'd be taking a walk. 27. The amateur genius couldn't close the window, but the time he'd spent, lots of time, was covered with a purple cloth hanging down in front of his eyes that said silence in its folds, and the amateur genius, too, folded. "How strange to be so soft on a street," he communicated to his friends. But where were they? The amateur genius felt himself to be inhabiting an interior, but though still on the street, he shifted the position of his body so many times nobody would have known if he were walking or twitching in place. Thank goodness he was alone, but much later he noticed he wasn't. It was at a party where everybody he met said, "Surprise, I saw you hesitating at the shop window, hiding your face in your hands." Caught like that, what could he do but smile and assume the purple mantle of sovereignty he always assumed at believing himself to be the center of attention? Marie was peeking through her fingers when a rush of air made her shiver just a little. "Here's half of my candy bar," offered the amateur genius, and it was her delicate fingers uppermost in his mind that was certainly collecting images that made him say, "Wait a minute, do I want to lead her down that particular path?" But gobbling her portion of the candy bar, Marie was in no mood to argue, and the amateur genius just folded one more of his royal ideas into the very brain that didn't have to choose, so vast was its ever-growing collection, though nobody ever looked inside to see what was going on. "Can I look?" "No, Marie, you made your choice." "How could I resist?" she opinionated, licking her fingers. But the amateur genius was halfway down the boulevard, even though there was nobody there to see him move, and it didn't look like he did. 28. The amateur genius, the body tilted, the sun through the available window. But what? Who? How? by the whoosh that the amateur genius had not surfaced inside of yet, but those were his methods of rising. So it was, and the piano played by Marie surfaced also into the relevant experience tableau, bright elements overlapping the expectation of a sweet taste in the mouth, and Marie said, "Music distracts me, isn't that a surprise?" And Maurice replied, "Oh, Marie, give me your hand so I can be hand in hand with you only." But the piano playing was a real distraction, and Maurice found himself tripping across the terrace, screaming out, "Hello, hello, my circular movement is an idea, but has it really taken off?" People went to the window, but they didn't see Maurice, who had already thought better of his way of behaving and disappeared, leaving only a piece of paper with his name on it. "I am Maurice, maybe, and I'll be going home." Marie knew where home was, so she had more tea and listened to a little more music with confidence, but what did that listening amount to on this occasion? Oh, well, she didn't recognize tunes exactly, but the multiplicity of notes. Something Maurice had once named real excitement, but now he, too, was off-center, and Marie cocked her head to the side without realizing the different things she seemed to be imitating. The amateur genius again at the window. Opening outward, he knocked on himself, and the window remembered breaking. As soft as was the experience, the amateur genius always conceptualized it as a very tough thing. Turn? He even did so, turned it, and was surprised at the way it eluded him, but of course being the amateur genius could also be thought of as a disguise, one of many, so the amateur genius returned to the party that was in progress. 29. The amateur genius placed no bets. His own number arose like a flag in the sky, and who waved it but the amateur genius himself, in a way that called no attention to either number or flag. Then, when the boulevard was terribly crowded, with people, we assume, other flags started appearing. "Oh, no," the amateur genius thought to himself. "I'll just disappear into the crowd, and the best time to do that is breakfast, since it should put a certain tone to the whole day." Marie wasn't sure about the differentiation between breakfast or dinner or even other meals for that matter, and did she say so? No, because the person she was facing, who was the amateur genius, of course, was turned in another direction, sipping from a cup of coffee. Words were still possible, of course, but Marie didn't like speaking to someone unless she was relatively speaking, looking straight into their eyes. Or deep, I should have thought to myself, thought Marie, but she realized the amateur genius didn't think deep thoughts, and the amateur genius himself said it out loud, "Stop thinking, Marie." His words hit her like a slap in the face, not that it hurt, of course, just that it made her alert, whereas similar insistence from others of her acquaintance had no such effect. "Oh, well," she thought, prompted by the amateur genius himself, "some situations just give everything that happens a different color." Was color the right word? Yes, it seemed right. Especially since everything in the street seemed to sparkle. 30. Many of the amateur genius's ideas were tossed off. He was always running fast to reassimilate, and his head itself twirled into space. "Let's not hope physically," gasped Marie. But where was she? On a balcony overlooking an especially wide boulevard, so she had her own problems holding on to the stone parapet to prevent a self-tumble into the traffic-laden street below. But at the same time, Marie knew she was secretly placed on her own 2 feet, and the distant boulevard sent up rumors, that's all, of the amateur genius's dizzy behavior. But could one properly call a rumor what was only an evoked memory? Marie didn't trouble her head, which was screwed on tight, as she always protested, when the amateur genius made one of his more dizzy proposals. There she spied him down in the street below, shouting up through cupped hands, "How did you get way up there, Marie?" But she heard nothing. Then she thought she heard the sound of running water and turned just in time to catch a faucet turning off behind her. Turn again, that was her self-induced message, and gazing again, it was a semicircle, back into the street, which was looking down, remember, she saw nothing that made her think of running water. How strange, since... But a sudden collision at a far corner started her on a whole new train of thought. Later on, arm in arm with the amateur genius, they passed the very corner where the very collision had taken place, and nobody was there anymore, and soon they, too, had turned a corner. "Who am I now?" said the amateur genius. Marie glanced into his face and didn't answer, realizing it could have been her own provocative question, but she just missed by 1 or 2 tiny steps. Pow! That was the direction of the plunge her mind took whenever she allowed these sudden twists and turns of thought to do their thing on her. 31. The amateur genius was interested in God. Who was he? Not the amateur genius. Having decided on a trip, he went, the amateur genius, out onto the sidewalk, realizing suddenly he had no place to go. God joined him if he realized that. If he didn't realize that and continued on his journey, then he would not be joined by God. He knew that, but the question was how to realize that. The amateur genius went public, but he had no very real way to do that. After all, he couldn't sit on the edge of the sidewalk. I decided. He could, but he didn't. Instead, he stayed home and went to bed. Not exactly. He lay in the darkened room, not 100% dark, but the blinds were drawn, even though light did come through, and it was on top of the bed that he extended himself. Where did God come into all of this? The minute he said extend, or wrote extend, it was in that word, extend. And the amateur genius knew that if he kept thinking to himself, extension, 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 something would happen, nothing would happen. That suddenly hit him, though he wanted to be hit no longer by the things of human life. But the word extension has nothing to do with God, and the word extend had something to do with that thing he could not name. Not everything, but a bit. So the amateur genius on the bed extended in the thing that resembled twilight, and he remembered being on the pavement with no place to go, and suddenly it happened. The pavement was over his head and his body was, okay, let's not say flying, but what supported that idea must have been hundreds of small space dots. This was too much for the amateur genius to think about except as a kind of extension of all those space dots filling the space that was under the pavement that was reversed over his head like a ceiling. It was a flash in the mind of the amateur genius, of course, but even so, how did he walk on that upside-down pavement or even sit on the edge? Did he? But all these ins and outs took something away from the amateur genius. Did he decide to tell the world he was interested in God? That wasn't the decision, exactly. He settled on the edge of an idea. Was it spinning him? Could he still walk? 32. The amateur genius was to direct an opera by the great composer Margolis. But on the day of the first rehearsal, the music had not been written. The amateur genius thinks, opera? His head opened like a chest cavity. Music is no longer necessary, he told the performers assembled under his baton. What are you talking about? No baton. The amateur genius went racing into the field. What field? And the baton he didn't carry was in front of him in this racing, not that he was racing after it. Just trying to keep from falling into that hole, that chest cavity, meant spinning the legs one after the other in a way that seemed circular to observers specially placed where? The amateur genius made music like this, choosing special places from which to observe the hyperactivity that was an optional illusion resulting from the position of the spectator, but took nothing physically from the amateur genius himself, who did make effort, but not in that arena where visibility reigned. Someone else seized the baton. But the mind of the amateur genius, running on, didn't register that on purpose. He couldn't be said to be participating in any particular rhythm because he was going so fast, no effort, remember, that the great unaccented beats of people looking and not looking meant nothing to him. That was his opera. That nothing. 33. A man with considerable talent. Could it be what he had always imagined? The amateur genius had no hold on reality. That was his hold on reality. He decided to be victimized in the streets and trundling along block after block. Nobody seemed to be taking advantage of his multiple offers. Whose dog was following him? Could it have been possibly Marie's? Or was the collar with those metal studs that did exist so many broadcasting nodules that only partially connected with the outer limits of his available dog love? Anyway, he did take the dog home, or rather he fantasizes that, leading it on a leash of intensive leather, as in fact it was deposited with a typical owner reply card in the local animal store, which seemed to be an animal store because of the animals in the window. The man behind the counter explained something interesting to the amateur genius. The animals in the window were in display, only to further display, this could go on forever, the jeweled watches and other baubles that looked carefully, though it didn't have to be so careful, were displayed upon those animals' bodies in order to make people look even more than they would look at the beautiful jewels. They would look at the animals. The amateur genius should have been able to psych that out, especially when he was given some of his own, gratis. Then he realized he had to pay for them, and he was fortunate in that he had lots of money on his person, because remember, his very purpose in going into the streets was to be taken advantage of. So he still had the dog, which means he did take it home along with the watch? Or was it a bracelet? He couldn't find the dial, so he certainly couldn't tell the time, but at home that was less important than when he was out in public. Then again, why is it even important in public? He undid the leash that connected himself and the dog he had named tentatively himself, and waited to see if the animal would wander away from him into the crowd, though it was hardly a crowd on that particular street, though a few people did pass by at regular rates. In order to make the test more orthodox, the amateur genius began counting from 1 to 50, that is to say he began at 1, and by the time he reached 50, which he thought of as the end of that particular test, the dog still hovered in the vicinity. Then the amateur genius leaned against a storefront and waited longer. Eventually the dog left, following a man who walked by and seemed to have nothing distinctive about his person, certainly nothing distinctive when compared to everything that was very distinctive about the amateur genius. A month or so later, the amateur genius was robbed of his bracelet, as a thief, who claimed he was holding a knife in the small of the amateur genius's back, was collecting his booty. The amateur genius explained, "There's an interesting story connected with this bracelet you're stealing from me." Much to his surprise, the thief remained to listen to the story of the descent into the street and the dog and the store with animals in the window and the disappearance of the dog. Then the thief left, and the amateur genius had interesting times imagining what the thief might have been thinking about the story and why he was a recipient of not only the bracelet but the story besides and how they might possibly go together. But he realized, the amateur genius, that the stolen bracelet was probably exchanged for money very quickly, while the story remained with the thief much longer. So it was detached, the story, from the bracelet. But it was still in the mind of two people, the thief and the amateur genius. But the amateur genius knew it was just a matter of time until the story that was his spread to others, and he resolved to lend his efforts in that direction. 34. Nobody told the amateur genius secrets. He was alone on the boulevard, and a stone widened as he looked at it, which formed just a small part of the facade of that particular building he stood in front of. The widening could, of course, absorb his whole consciousness, and he vowed not to let that happen, and then reversed himself to wonder why not. But it wasn't a full reversal, so there he was, poised deliberately between total absorption and partial absorption. When Marie called his attention to the very same stone, was it the next day? Why did she do that? What attracted her attention, particularly if it wasn't for the fact that the amateur genius himself had made it happen? Were such things, such transfers of consciousness, possible? The amateur genius called it coincidence, but that was in order to continue the conversation, even if it hadn't started, and Marie said, "This one stone, let's see if we can find anything amazing about it." She was trying hard, and for that the amateur genius gave her credit and a kiss on the cheek, and she almost slapped him, but then she wondered, "Why did I want to do that?" The urge, she meant, but of course she didn't know what she meant exactly, and the amateur genius just said, "Let's go on making these interesting choices." 35. The amateur genius found himself again in front of, this time, the wallpaper, and studying his fingers, he thought that what floated did not before his eyes, but shut, they echoed the fingers that shut also. And Marie was already attracted to the flutter of eyelids and the flutter of fingers, and nobody dared whisper in an alarm of whispering at that very moment the amateur genius passed through the wall into the next room. Of course, nobody saw that happen. Nobody's eyes, in a significant sense, were open to that moment of transition. 36. The amateur genius found himself unable to advance. He was facing the cafe door, the entrance, and his legs found themselves as if paralyzed. How foolish, thought the amateur genius. It's the mind, my own mind, which stops me from moving in the direction I wish to move. Only the word wish, oh, well, of course. Marie entered the street, that is to say, exited from the cafe, and observed the amateur genius not moving. She extended a paw. "Take my hand." And the amateur genius did, and was able to feel feeling flow back into his legs. "I'd be glad to help," Marie continued, "but you're going in." 37. The amateur genius. Deliberate debates did not interest him. On the boat of his dreams he floated, and the icy water sent chills into the larger of two glasses he held, one in each hand. He had dipped each of them into the ocean as the boat plowed gently through the waves that hardly moved under the ongoing prow. Now that a bit of the ocean was in these two glasses, look, thought the amateur genius. He said no words in his mind after that. He returned the water to the ocean. He shivered at his power. 38. The amateur genius discovered waiting at the end of the street the woman selling strawberries. He regarded her sign and smiled at the way it said strawberries, when in fact the strawberries were evident not on the sign or in the sign, but considerable space intervened between the strawberries so named, displayed on a wooden table to the left of the sign, and the sign itself that flashed in his mind as the solid object it was and was not. Strawberries, certainly, but the wood invaded, what? The strawberries themselves. Because later on, driving his car fast down the boulevard, the amateur genius reached blindly for a strawberry and re-guided his hand. The taste suffered the taste of the wood, that is to say, biting into the experience was no longer extraordinary. Why is there a woody taste to these strawberries? Chimed in Marie, and the memory of that sign flooded again into the amateur genius's mind. And the connective links extended in his mind in a way that seemed playful articulation of the hundreds of strawberries that had lined the distant fields, unpicked or picked from bushes that nevertheless gave forth, among others, the particular strawberries that had finished in the amateur genius's automobile and then into his and Marie's mouths. Strawberries went in, thoughts came out. But the thoughts tasted like wood, he meant to say words, and as the car sped through what was now woods and bright things flashed occasionally from the dark alleys between trees, the amateur genius tried it on for size, that taste on the tongue that tripped it, and he and Marie found themselves singing a whole coda, or and. What followed the and word, said Marie very definitively. And the amateur genius said, hold on to your hats, as he stepped on the gas, though it should have been hold on to your heads, as so fast it all went, that in a cloud of mixed-up dust behind them on the road, something got left behind, and something else stuck to the tailpipe. And the amateur genius said, look, this is my nose, which he pointed to with a free hand, as Marie said, steer carefully, by which he meant keep your two hands on the steering wheel, but he, of course, decided to interpret differently, and he licked his lips, and Marie thought about giving him a kiss and tried another strawberry and said nothing. 39. Morning and madness. The amateur genius was over his shoelaces, a quiet job of industry. So that attitude was forthcoming. Marie was staring at the sky, and in that moment she experienced the vertigo of displaced emotion. Oh, up to the sky, she thought. Then her adventure in a cafe was over. Nobody but the amateur genius could satisfy her. That was why she had indeed dawdled over the one pastry and the one cup of coffee. But when he entered so well dressed, nevertheless, the amateur genius's shoelaces were too long for the particular shoes chosen, and they dangled in a way that almost promised to threaten Marie's cup of coffee, in which, admittedly, she had already lost interest. But there it was, that danger that could easily transfer itself going through the charade of 100 false faces. If the sun had been bright enough, but that was half an hour ago, danger was probably on the route to being bleached out of any conceivable physical objects. Another one of the talents that folded up softly in the wake of the amateur genius's trajectory through the day. You see, Marie knew that, so she often latched herself onto his activities. But hovering in the background wasn't her style either, so, as they sauntered forth from the food place and to the directional street place, she chose a stride that was rather vigorous, but then had to admit it was the amateur genius who initiated the rhythm. How happy an accident we rendezvoused, he smiled to Marie, but she knew there was acid in his smile, only that was her own worldview that so crystallized it. But on a day that had begun with intense sunlight to be soon squashed by relatively soft cloud cover, a crystallization of sorts, acid-like or not, was so clearly a compensating factor that Marie felt confident a little sympathy would be forthcoming from a partner as wide in feeling as was the amateur genius, and indeed reflected in the glass storefronts that whipped by. They were indeed in rapid lockstep now. His smile seemed to soften. 40. The apron is unavailable. The philosopher shuts a mouth of teeth, and what climbs in after the tongue is zipped is called no town in some cities, but in the city where the amateur genius searches, a lack of articulate speech is an unanswerable demand that the vacant city uses to repopulate itself, thank God. And when that last word was, well, not exactly spoken, here he fell off his chair, but grabbing the edges, he was all the while seated, of course.
Marie didn't want to be sucked into that particular vortex, so she, too, changed into something more comfortable, and by the time it got to be gloves, she regloved herself in a way that let the whole world say, "I'm glad you came to a decision," and this was vis-a-vis the amateur genius and nobody else, because nobody else counted. The mouthing of names had no end, and personality seemed to succeed personality, which made everybody just surrender to the swim of things. But when the amateur genius finally surfaced alone, he had nothing to make excuses for, because holding tight to Marie's hand, she gloved, remember, she too was lifted out of everyone's more specific memory. There, where she hovered on the lips, she and the amateur genius could hardly be differentiated. That was called the love that surpasseth all love, though they never spent much time together. "Oh, hi," Marie would say, trying to act casual. But internally, the amateur genius was ablaze, so nobody ever knew if he was responding to a greeting or just continuing along a path that was to him totally natural. 41. Nobody talks, but the amateur genius can handle that. Where did everybody go? The room, absent the others, including Helene, Anna, Simone, and Marie, seems heavier on one side, but of course that's where the amateur genius sits in his easy chair, legs thrown up over one of the soft, padded arms. His only desire, to scratch his extended neck, for instance, then leads to a rather insatiable desire for a chocolate, and none being immediately available, he opts for lethargy to see what can be squeezed out of that ploy. When little white lambs start frolicking in the imaginary field behind the window that seems opening in the top of his head, "Whoa!" exclaims the amateur genius and turns, sitting to the river. "Come on now," offered Helen. "Is this a real or posited river?" "But only we've been here before," was what the amateur genius could remind his tawny-haired partner. Only Helene, who flickered back and forth immediately with Marie's face, could only remember hordes of people in attendance, so that she wasn't sure if the hordes were an attendant phenomenon to the river or some kind of lower-grade manifestation of the river itself. And the amateur genius snuffed out that trajectory of thought, and there they were, himself and Helene, on the banks of something that seemed relatively empty, so when they decided to plunge in suddenly it was no longer empty, even though it was, of course, more than ever invisible. Marching here and there, treading the steps leading to the higher level of the city, the amateur genius broke his arm. How, you may well ask, could simply treading the wide ascending steps lead to a broken arm? There must be an aspect to that event that has not been narrated. The amateur genius heard the question, of course, and smiled as he explained that the answer was very simple. In climbing the steps, he was at one moment made dizzy by the thought of his ascent. It was, in other words, an emotional experience, and the next step from that emotional experience to the broken arm can be clearly visualized, though a visualization is not, of course, the real experience leading to the real broken arm. Imagine a fall, serious and deep, from a position near the height of the steps. The body could slide down an entire run of the stairs, and there could be a slight circular accumulation in the trajectory of the descent. And in the course of that trajectory, the amateur genius finds beauty and poetry, even though other aspects of the experience are negative. But what are they? What is negative about those other aspects? The pain? There really was no pain at the moment of occurrence, because there was surprise. And afterward there was pain, but by then the amateur genius was someplace else, seated in a cafe with his friend Marie and telling about some very different adventure concerning the purchase of a wonderful carpet. Nobody else could have imagined the amateur genius carpeting exactly that section of stairway where the fall was to have taken place, but the amateur genius, with the help of three friends whom he also paid a substantial amount of money, spread this excellent and colorful carpet over a length of the steps, even though the carpet did not, of course, conform exactly to the steps, and there were sections between each step made ambiguous by the failure of the carpet to bend and fit snugly to the quick transition from step riser to step level. And when walked upon, did that ease or interfere with the desired progression in either direction? Because one could choose to descend as well as ascend these monumental steps. At any event, considerations of practicality and safety gave way to the surprise of carpet laid over irregular stone, and when climbing this section of stairs, the amateur genius knew that an adjustment of sensibility would be the unavoidable result inside the mind of whoever was not the amateur genius, but who did come upon this same sector and did or did not fall. Oh, make no mistake. No marker or plaque was placed to convey any of this relevant information to the casual or not-so-casual passerby. But when ideas hover in the air, whatever their embodiment, the amateur genius knew full well their influence was persuasive, though at the same time delicate. and so time would stretch forward, and as it did so, straightening out the folds of its own particular fabric like the sides of an extended accordion, the note that would inevitably sound would lift one, who was that one, gently. And the vertical direction evoked was the same vertical direction the amateur genius imagined as he worked his legs back and forth like pistons in the midst of his feverish dreaming that left beads of sweat traveling from his forehead into a flung forward arc that decorated the walls of the room or street through which his tumbling body zoomed like a gyroscope, plunged forward without losing at all its spun-held orientation, which centered no matter how high it climbed below. Oh, the amateur genius. 42. The amateur genius on the streets, but though alone, not, as it was only for a moment that other passers-by flickered in his awareness. A shop window? One of many. And that enabled it to vanish, but of course, as it did so, so did the amateur genius. Who was it, then, who put a hand on a doorknob and turned? Was this home? It wasn't the amateur genius who entered the apartment, but it was. First, he collected an armful of books paid for, which passed like a dream. Then the weight of the books in his arms spun him backward into the realm of regret he left with each dawn, only to return at unpredictable moments of the day. Regret. He anointed different features of his changing environment with this same slowly coagulating fluid, and clouds drifting over the buildings spread from windows or gaps between buildings flowed slower and slower. Regret. It returned like a gun fired from one of those empty windows. Everything stopped moving. But that was just for a brief moment, and then the day flowed on, and the amateur genius was back in the stream of life, licking his fingers. 43. The amateur genius bought flowers, and he carried them home in plastic. The amateur genius bought flowers, but then he forgot to buy them. He was walking along the Avenue de Maine, and it was raining lightly, and the flowers themselves were damp with the traveling rain, and the only thing that wasn't traveling was something about the amateur genius that was poised. The amateur genius separated in his mind the sights that were mainly the buildings or the spaces between the buildings on the Avenue de Maine. How strange, he said to himself, that I want to clutch my head concerning the space between these buildings I am registering, but not counting on the Avenue de Maine. How strange, I want to make a positively melodramatic gesture, and he thought of himself sliding into a whole line of positive positions, and the negative space between the buildings on the Avenue de Maine clicked into position also, and that click didn't make even the slightest tremor in the very solid buildings that were built of stone and glass and slate roofs, and the amateur genius rolled his head in a way that echoed the writing of long, flowing, and significant words on the slate roofs of the Avenue de Maine, from which pigeons arose, some with flowers in their mouths that were called beaks, and the amateur genius dropped his, and a passerby dropped his newspaper in sink, but he wasn't reading it. Look fast, whispered the amateur genius. Do you see words or roofs? And the passerby was merely confused about momentarily having been seen as he dropped his newspaper without knowing why, and as the amateur genius smiled and recorded it, a spectator on the other side of the street pronounced, "Your flowers are more valuable than your newspaper." So you see, there on the other side of the street, confusion was a result of distance and angle of vision. But with the amateur genius there was no confusion, as significant words seemed to pop directly from the damp newspaper page into his consciousness as it rose, tracing a trajectory from the damp pavement toward his chest and arcing in an extension toward the passerby who was at that same time now bending for the flowers that had fallen previously and been so noticed. Later that day, the amateur genius was home, would you call it home, sipping tea. He spied his newspaper on the table and found not a single one of his words he had heretofore found so potent. But he didn't hold his head, there was no anguish, and he had the immediate sensation of being on a platform, comfortable, that was sliding through space at an angle, at a smooth and rapid rate, and he did not look or even imagine looking toward his feet to discover the nature of that platform. But the truth is, it was beautifully carpeted, and if asked, he could have decided to know that and innumerable other things. 44. Two things were available to the amateur genius, the city through which he walked, the language that was not walked through but did manipulate his steps, his direction, his speed. Flinging steps? No. The lower part of the body? To fling would be a dance, that wasn't the issue. It was rather from the torso, at least, the flung moment, feeling, intensity. Whatever its trajectory, was that language? Was that a bodily carved word or two? To say it was to fold back into the dance, flinging it, the word on word, city-coiled language, tongue of intention flapped against itself double. 45. Along the city pavements, the amateur genius shrieked out syllables, and the animal swerved, and the amateur genius cast crumbs, but they returned, amazingly, to his own hand, as crumbs, to be sure, but they returned. He validated them. He showed them to Marie, and she went through his pockets. "Here's evidence," she said, fingering the small grains, the residue therein accumulated. But the amateur genius just smiled, shall we say he tossed her a smile, and when she turned away irritated, his reward was in the lesson learned. 46. The amateur genius chose to resurface as soon as it was raining, as soon as the newspapers hit the stands, but we should properly say flew into the amateur genius's face as the stars in his eyes hit home. But how was traveling imagined or encountered? Traveling as a solid, there in three-dimensional space. The amateur genius compared that to his own solidity, and as he made another fold in the newspaper with bad news, he realized, rain is my element because I can refresh the so many different body parts. Here, let me wrap these papers in flowers. The lead article wasn't about the amateur genius. He had to throw his gold coins at a hole in the street until somebody came to the rescue with a look. It's about the amateur genius on page 17. But the type hissed up into nothing. It wasn't touchable, that's what gnawed at the amateur genius's heart, or so much more than the gold pieces rolling down the street as if they were chasing nobody, the amateur genius was being ignored. That's why the soft rain depressed him, but he decided to jump in head first, and he wrecked everything in sight, first smearing his own face with mud picked up from the newspapers, which of course had been saturated all night, except now they flew, a white flutter in the downdraft that only the rain made when it poured, and the amateur genius could calculate carefully and levitate, and his real name surfaced, which was again a disappearing act, and internally the projection in rosy letters, the amateur genius, glowed over the boulevard the entire length. What smiles that shone across the amateur genius's lips? What songs rose in his heart? You or I might recognize some of those popular tunes, but the majority? The amateur genius turned them into something so complex that even the traffic cop expert, that was his specialty, rounded the corner, scraping a heel on the cobblestones and whispering to himself, "What the hell? That's music that eludes even me." So the amateur genius felt justified in his sense of superiority. 47. Wishful thinking? Probably not. The horizon widened or narrowed down significantly, and the amateur genius found himself in front of a large monument dedicated to the memory of a popular singer who had thrilled mostly young girls, not so much the amateur genius directly. The electricity in her body was not yet controllable or knowable. It was that which made Marie a specific creature. Later on, she would become fulfilled. The contours, gesture molded of her own self, would match the contours of the erotic electrified fluid that coursed through, borrowing her, and the resultant match between body, self, field, energy would make the mature Marie, the defined personality Marie, cohere to a typology that Earth had spewed forth for hundreds of years on all parts of the globe, which was, after all, sphere-like. But at this moment in her life, she was drawn, she was traced, touched, by forces not yet able to make their home in any articulable self, and that other self bounced gently in the currents of the world, being, rather than integrated, an element of distinct noticeableness. The very aroma of her being fitted not like the proverbial glove on whatever hand was available to be fitted, but rather gentle slaps on the cheek of who might notice, "Wake up." And what they woke up to was something yet to find its place in the scheme of things, Marie's being. Still under the rule of alert curiosity, hence stained into noticeableness. That tincture of life that was still foreign to Marie, though it rose from her very source, so rendering that childlike divided being divinely noticeable. That was the amateur genius's particular identification with the large monument that had been decorated with flowers he dared not touch. The same name that made him also noticeable inhibited his movements in certain directions. He remained, therefore, the amateur of his most dangerous passions, which meant vast stores of poignancy to savor. At the same time, movement through the real world became somewhat inhibited. 48. Nothing in the amateur genius's repertoire prepared him for the morning like others that was unique. All were unique mornings. But here a broken plate and a baby's cry crumbled from the past, grain pocked like old film. And the baby with the wrinkled face was of course himself, but it also bespoke alien, other, how to get a handle on it. Marie was standing in front with porridge never tasted, and the soft food hurled across space into the wall near the clock, That's what set it off, this unique explosion. The clock that did not tick but just said, "My face is your face." And the amateur genius relinquished his toys. Toys, of course. He had surrounded himself with toys like anyone else, and now he released them, that was the unique part, with a rush that was a physical sound like somebody doing a bad imitation over the radio. Still it worked, as they say, that rush. And the past fell away like ice cream into soup, still cool to the tongue, and the amateur genius was filled with the past now falling away to a present place in the dome of his head embossed, one might even say picture-laced, totally controllable. Now he could begin to drive his own life in the direction chosen, but wait. Who chose? It was a done deal, and the amateur genius was a little late, a little after the fact. So all he could do was steer, grimace, and hope he took it internally for a smile, and say, "Morning, you are the first. I glide through you and into you. That's what makes you unique." This had happened before, but the amateur genius always lost it as a memory. That was his strength. 49. The amateur genius comes to think he is or is not in heaven. If he is in heaven, he is receiving messages of value that need not be communicated, because being in heaven, the value of the message is to engender growth and extension within the message itself only, self-perfection ripening like a fruit that never falls to decay. If he is not in heaven, communication of messages counts, because the definition of non-heaven, he thinks, is particularnessness. Which means a contrary longing for unity exists and must be fulfilled, communication being the primary means to attempt such a thing. What is the message to be or be not communicated? At first, the amateur genius thinks he might have been chosen as one of God's messengers, but he does not know if he should deliver the message or protect the message from those who, he imagines, would rip it from inside his consciousness before full ripeness, which would hurt. Traveling toward memory, the rain that fell erased memories. In their place, cities reconstructed themselves, testifying at all times to what was evanescent. How could it be? The beauty touched only what was postulated, never by what existed. It was so, and the amateur genius threw external hands skyward. The city, not in flames, but shifting in the breeze of his mind like a curtain lifted by silent willpower, only the willpower was the rain, and the earth so nourished came forth with flowers that also said, "Brief, brief, we are here as visitors."